Yeah.
Hello, boys and girls, women and men, trans and untrans.
Be careful.
Be careful. I don't know what we're going, but it is episode 6, Mark of the Beast, Unbalanced Note on the Multimedia Men Podcast Network on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. I'm Brian Kluger. We've had lunch. There have been all sorts of other things ingested. And I believe Jacob is strapped into the test chair, ready to work on this show.
I got my number 2 pencil, dude. Give me something to write on.
We do. We do. It's going to be great. We are going to talk about our main event later today, which is the band called Boston. More Than a Feeling, right here, for sure. And then we'll have actually not one, but 2 one-hit wonders that came out in the same year.
A double
whammy. At the same time. It's going to be crazy. Pretty much the same song, so maybe you, before we get there, you probably know what that is.
Context clues of whoop whoop.
Yeah. Whoop whoop.
Whoop. Boone County mating call.
Jacob, how are you doing today, sir?
Man, I had my vegan omelet or enchiladas for lunch. I'm feeling good, dude. You got this whole thing of chocolate out again, which is...
Well, there's graham crackers, there's raisins.
What the fuck
M&Ms.
Is a ram cracker?
What's a graham cracker?
The fuck's a frush?
The fuck is a frush? But thanks for joining. It is the Unbalanced Note. We're happy to be here. First off, though, Jacob and I were on location last week. We went to a live concert where we saw the band Dawes open up for ELO.
What is it?
Electric Light Orchestra.
Oh, my goodness.
I was about to say electronic, but my mind was elsewhere.
Yeah, clearly.
Clearly.
Electronic Light Orchestration Unit.
And I must say that at that concert, I have not had I've had a little bit of alcohol since then, but that after that concert, I was really hungover.
He got lit up, dude. His pants came off. It was crazy.
Yeah.
Goodbye, Mr. Blue Sky. Goodbye, denim jeans.
Yeah. Hello, Jeff Lynn.
Yeah. Hey, Jeff, we're up here.
So, this band, Dawes, how do you spell it?
Dawes.
So, I've talked to a lot of people about the show, and it seems like a ton of people know who Dawes is. And which is good because they've had like 6 albums, but they're still, I mean, they're opening up for ELO, which
Electronic
is
cool. Light Orchestra.
But you described them as something really funny. You were like Maroon 5.
No, not Mumford and Sons.
Mumford and Sons. Yeah.
They're like, they do kind of get in the Mumford and Sons, like folky kind of area.
Yeah.
But live, man, those guys put on they kind of get in like Allman Brothers territory.
Correct.
A little bit. But they're a phenomenal live band, but nothing, you know, like ELO. Like, I mean, ELO is just like the Beatles, you know?
Right.
Like, they're kind of in a league of their own. Who else sounds like that?
No,
pretty,
nobody.
Pretty unique sound for ELO. But, yeah, Dawes is, they're, man, that's a great band. And you had not seen them, I guess, before, huh?
No, I had not seen them before, but I guess they're coming back to Dallas in November to the Bomb Factory.
I've seen them there before, and they're great, man, like... You listen to them on a recording, and they make really good albums, but there's an energy they have, like, when they play live, they're a band, and they're into jamming, like, so the songs are, or, you know,
they're longer than normal.
Yeah, they jam, and, you know, great guitar players, both the guitars in that band, and the drummer's phenomenal, bass player's killer, I think they backed Jackson Browne for a long time, they were, like, his backing band, and they're big Warren Zevon fans, so there's, you know, their lyrics are very kind of sly and, like, tongue-in-cheeky, you know?
Yeah. So...
Smart band.
So, smart band. And they played at a record store. Do you know if they played a good show there?
Yeah, they did an acoustic. They played acoustic set there. So, and that's when I was saying they sound like Mumford & Sons.
Yeah.
When they do that acoustic, that's when they're channeling MS.
Okay. So not Maroon, not MS.
Not M5.
Not MS, the disease.
Not MS, no. Not that's not good.
We're not channeling that.
That'll shrink you. Right? Like your hands just close?
Yes.
Ah! That's horrible. But how did we get here?
That
because you said ELO was Electronic Light Orchestra.
Yeah, for some reason, my brain went sideways. Actually, Jacob thought I was going to pass out into the bowl of chips at the restaurant earlier.
Yeah, like, that it didn't. That it looked like that was going to happen.
Nope, it didn't. So Dawes played, then ELO came out, and they really just. I guess it was the first time since 1981 that Jeff Lynne actually played in Dallas, which is really weird. It's been since I was born.
His Southern hillbillies, he's scared of them, dude. Those crazy Americans. I'm British, damn it.
So if you're unfamiliar with ELO, you'd probably recognize our song Mr. Blue Sky, which was featured in tons of movies, including the recent Guardians of the Galaxy 2 movie, which was the opening song where the little baby Groot dances. That is ELO.
Wasn't it in the first one, too?
No.
Wasn't?
Also, you would have heard their song, Don't Bring Me Down, which was featured in the Steven Spielberg, J.J. Abrams movie Super 8. And, of course, you know, like the song Evil Woman is a fantastic one of my favorite ones of theirs. I love that song.
Dude, ELO's got, like, no shortage of hits to choose from, man.
Right.
Like, that... Jeff Lynne fucking rules. Hey, Traveling Wilburys, man.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He sounded great, dude. That was... Me and you have been to a lot of shows there. Or, you know, a good amount of shows.
Right.
And they were probably the best sounding band I've probably ever heard it in there.
No, they...
It sounded fucking great.
It did. And Jacob described ELO in that concert. It's like, this is like the music... you would take an acid trip in space to.
Yeah, like getting off the launch pad, like if you're just floating through the cosmos.
Yeah.
That or like Funkadelic, right?
Right.
Like every other song, you could have like ELO and then Funkadelic, but that's, you know, that's music to drift off into space to. I've also, if you just looked down from where we were at our seats, I'd never seen so many Hawaiian shirts in one spot either.
It was
like
a Jimmy Buffett concert.
Yeah, well, there was a sea of fucking dad shirts. For sure, man. Like,
what shirt did I wear and what shirt did you wear?
I had on a Lynyrd Skynyrd shirt.
Okay.
And then...
Did I have a wrestling shirt on?
No, you had... Like, it was like
I had the alleged... The ostrich.
It had an ostrich on it.
And
it
said allegedly.
Because I'm still trying to figure that one out. Like, I'm like... It's one of those things where it's probably so obvious and I just can't fucking...
Well, to be fair, it is from a TV show called Letterkenny and it's about this running joke in the show that some ginger kid fucked an ostrich.
It's even better that I don't get it.
Yeah.
Right?
The ginger fucked an ostrich.
Is that
somebody
that Canadian?
Always says allegedly.
Is that... They're Canadian, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Letterkenny.
They're on a farm.
Correct.
Okay, yeah.
So I got that shirt, so I was wearing it for Jacob and ELO to see who actually got that shirt, but nobody did. But
not even the ginger guy.
As Jacob did say, there was a plethora of dad shirts, of Hawaiian shirts. You actually thought you were at a Buffett concert.
Nah, you knew you weren't at a Jimmy Buffett show because there wasn't piss everywhere. Have you ever been to a Jimmy Buffett concert? Oh my God, dude. That is... If you ever want to see, like, the...
What does a Jimmy Buffett concert smell like on a hot August summer night?
Dude, it doesn't have to be hot to have the... Like, it... You know how, like, if you have, like, that, like, drunk, like, alcoholic uncle who just sometimes, like, always smells like gin?
Yes.
Right? Like, that and urine and vomit?
Yeah.
Because it's just people just fucking... They're out of control, man. That's about, like, the low point for, like, white people. Right, is like it doesn't get any worse than a Jimmy Buffett concert.
That's the low. That's when you realize you hit rock bottom.
Totally. Oh yeah. You don't even know it because you're just around 30,000 other people who are also having a midlife crisis meltdown. Ugh. Right, wearing socks and sandals and fucking neon green Hawaiian shirts.
Yeah.
And they're all like beet red in the face. They have those big gin noses, you know. Like,
but that wasn't ELO though, right?
No. Well, the shirts were.
Yeah, but not the smell.
No smells.
So the show was good. It was a good set list. They played all their hits. They ended with a cover of Chuck Berry's "Roll Over Beethoven."
Yeah, they shouldn't have done that, man. Like, they should have fucking ended with... They should have ended their set with "Roll Over Beethoven," then encored
"Blue Sky."
Yeah, or something.
Which was weird. I mean, I guess...
Because you get Jeff Lynne up there doing, like, you know, Chuck Berry guitar is not, like, tough to play, but it's all, right. Like, feel. And, I mean, God, they fucked that up. That was my only complaint of that show, actually. I was like, if they would have ended it a little differently, that would have been maybe one of the best shows I've ever been to. It was still great. I never thought I'd have a chance to see him.
Yeah,
so well, I was like,
since 1981, it's just weird.
Yeah.
You know, like, why?
Fucking, I mean, who in the 80s in Dallas, Texas was going to listen to fucking ELO?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, you're in the fucking gun-toting, you know, jerky-chewing fucking...
Well,
redneck kind of ville a little bit.
So he was back in 1981, and I am going to look in 1981 One Hit Wonders. So that was 1981, Grover Washington Jr., Just the Two of Us, Tommy Two Tone, 8675309.
Great song.
And Soft Cell, Tainted Love, Bertie Higgins, Key Largo. And before that is Turning Japanese and Cars and Funky Town and Whip It. So whoever's... Those were the top hits, but I don't know what for Texas, but ELO doesn't fit into that category at all, I don't think. Do you think?
No, they're from outer space, dude. They're like Boston, right? Like,
right.
Fucking spaceship on the cover, you don't get it. It's that easy. ELO's not for everyone. Like, I always thought ELO would have been like what the Beatles would have sounded like if they would have done like methamphetamines. Like, instead of psychedelics.
Hmm.
Because Jeff Lynne has that kind of... He kind of takes the... Both great parts of like Paul McCartney and John Lennon, like the brilliant lyrics, like the storytelling lyrics, where when he's singing, like you can visually paint a picture in your head of like what's going on. Like every Beatles song is like that.
Yeah.
Like it just has this very vivid, like, you know, presentation to it. Same with Jeff Lynne. Like it's that big orchestral, you know,
yeah.
The strings and stuff, you know, and like the Revolver era Beatles stuff, like when they got psychedelic,
yeah,
you know, smoking weed and fucking doing acid and stuff. Like it's only going to make great people better. It's never ruined anyone's life, you know, but yeah, Jeff Lynne always thought was like, you know, kind of like a, it's not disco by any stretch of the imagination, but kind of leans into that, like, kind of dancier side of, like, what rock can do a little bit. Just feel-good music, you know?
Well, it's like rock and roll, but with, like, a lot of organ, synth, and, like, a big orchestra feel.
Yeah, there's strings and stuff. Yeah. But, you know, it's like if you've ever done cocaine before and you do, like, two lines and then you put on fucking some ELO, you're like, well, that's fitting. Like, that just makes sense, you know? It's like getting high and listening to Black Sabbath.
Right.
I'm going to smoke this joint and listen to Sweet Leaf. Right? It's like bacon, right? It only enhances it.
Yeah. Oh, which is a great question. That's going to have to be a whole podcast right there. But
that's a week's worth.
That is a week's worth of podcasts, this bacon thing. But we did have a good time at ELO. We will be hitting
Someone had too much fun.
Someone had too much fun. Yes, yes, yes. Keep going.
And it was not me. Brian got annihilated and ate his shoes.
I ate my shoes?
He might have. I don't know. He went disappearing for a little bit, and then he came back, and he had his pants on his head.
It got crazy that night, and just luckily we made it home safely to talk about it.
It's crazy, like, when I'm the level-headed one, right? Like, oh, no, it's cool. Jake's driving. Like, what?
Yeah, how is this happening?
It's cool. He's sober.
No, there was stuff to do there, but we had a good time, and it was a good show. Do you think that ELO will come back to Dallas so we can see them again?
Never. Before? That's it, dude.
That was the last one.
I'm pretty sure he even said that this was his last leg of touring. Because he's 70, you know, 70 or 71. Jesus. He sounded great, man.
He looks like, good, too.
Yeah. I'd like to know if he's wearing a wig or not.
With, like, really?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm going to look.
Because he doesn't look like he's aged, you know? Like, he always wears a hat and sunglasses and has, like, a goatee. Well,
probably a lot of dye, for sure.
But you know what I mean? Like, you never really get to see Jeff Lynne's face.
He is 70 years old.
Because he's always wearing glasses, you know? He's got a lot going on his face. So you can't really see if... He looks great, man. Like, and he sounded incredible. This whole band was fantastic. That was a great show.
ELO, if you're lucky enough to see them, go see them before you don't see them again.
Yeah, don't be.
Do you think they'll be like Queen, where they'll have like somebody replace Jeff Lynne so ELO can keep touring?
Never, because we didn't go see ELO. We went and saw Jeff Lynne's ELO.
Yes.
So a couple of those guys, they own, you know, they tour sometimes because they used to go by ELO2 and,
yeah,
you know, there's some different, you know, variations of that live band, but no, Jeff Lynne is the fucking, he's the key ingredient.
There you go.
No Jeff Lynne, no ELO.
No Jeff Lynne, no ELO.
No snow, no show.
All right. We had a good time. Moving on to some news. The Eagles, the band The Eagles, dethroned Michael Jackson's Thriller album for best-selling album of all time. Basically, it's their album, The Greatest Hits, from 1971 and 1975. It's not even like a real album. It's the Greatest Hits album. They have surpassed this because Michael Jackson has held that record since Thriller came out. So... what do you think about this?
Man, I'm not an Eagles fan, I'm also not a Michael Jackson fan, so I'm glad that they crushed the pedophile.
He's not a pedophile.
He is, dude.
He's not.
They said it. I read it online. It's true.
Do you believe everything?
I believe everything on the internet. Before I go anywhere, you know I check Yelp.
Oh, my God. You and Yelp.
How many have they sold? It's got to be in the 600 millions, I bet.
The 1976 compilation has been certified 38 times platinum. Thriller has been bumped to second at 33 times platinum. So there you go. 38 times platinum. Is that what, 38 million?
Yeah, I guess that so. Means?
That's kind of crazy.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, what do you say to that? 38 million of anything is incredible.
But I don't get it. I don't get, people are still buying this album.
Hotel Why? California, Duke. We were just talking about Margaritaville. It's the same thing, dude. The Eagles, think of it this way. If you just start naming great bands from the 70s, if you just started rattling them off, most of them that you would probably say would not be American. So when you start thinking of great American rock and roll bands, there's really not a, right out of the gate, you can't really start naming a ton.
Tom Petty.
70, early 70s, okay. Right? Yes. When they were getting going.
Okay. Weird. But yeah.
So they're America's rock and roll band, kind of, in a way. I think Lynyrd Skynyrd is the best American rock and roll band.
Southern.
No, just rock and roll across the board, dude. That band was, they kind of got the Southern, shtick kind of put on them by their label.
Yeah.
Because, they got to market something, you know? If they would have just been a rock band, they wouldn't have been that huge. You got to get out there and fly that fucking Confederate flag, right? Where the Eagles were that more kind of West Coast sounding, real passive oohs and ahs.
It was
they weren't a rock band.
Yeah.
But
it was softer for sure.
Yeah. Well, most definitely. But I mean, I like Joe Walsh, but the Eagles,
Well, now we need to know.
I'd rather listen to Poco. That's the fucking band, dude.
Poco.
Oh yeah, Poco was they should have been. They should have the level of success the Eagles had, and that was a couple of the guys from Buffalo Springfield when Buffalo Springfield broke up. Neil Young and Stephen Stills. You had Richie Furay, which was in that band. He left and started Poco with Rusty Young, who played. I don't know if you know the Buffalo Springfield song "Kind Woman."
Yeah.
Okay, the guy who played organ on that started this band Poco with Richie Furay, and Poco is basically the Eagles. They just started 6 years too soon.
Huh.
So by the time Poco had kind of run its course, the Eagles were taken off. And the Eagles, they just stole Jackson Brown songs and,
which I'm a big fan of Jackson.
Yeah, dude, Jackson, same thing, man. It would be more incredible if Jackson Brown was best-selling, outsold fucking Thriller. Think about that.
Ain't gonna happen.
Never. 38 times platinum, dude.
That's 38 million. That's a lot.
Metallica has got to be up there for the Black Album. I bet that's got a lot.
We looked at that one time, and Metallica's way down the list.
Post Malone's going to beat everyone, though, dude. That's all that matters.
Well, we have some Post Malone news soon.
The great white hype.
Oh, God. Gross.
White men can't jump.
But speaking of all these awards and records and stuff, we have to talk about MTV Music Awards or Video Music Awards happened yesterday on MTV. Horrible.
We tuned in. We were watching it live.
Live. Aretha Franklin, of course, passed away. We talked about that last week a little bit. But I guess the executives at MTV, for some reason, thought that Madonna is related in some form or fashion to Aretha Franklin. So they had Madonna get up at the beginning of the show and do a speech about the late Aretha Franklin. And what happened was nothing short of stupidity, idiocracy, and more self-indulgent bullshit Madonna. So Madonna's speech was a little over 6 minutes, and you can listen to it. And we listened to it before this podcast, and it basically it's Madonna talking about herself. And at the very end saying, I tell the story because Aretha Franklin was part of this story. And that basically is the gist of it. Like, it was Madonna talking about herself and her career and not about Aretha Franklin. And it's been drawing a ton of criticism. Jacob, are you surprised that Madonna would do something
like this? No, dude. Fucking Madonna has been like a career idiot. Like, I don't get the appeal with someone like that at all. Like, Madonna is kind of like everything wrong with music. Like, she's kind of she's played a huge part in why music sucks so much now.
Well, because of her, and I will agree with this, it wasn't all about the music. It was about what can I wear? What tits can I show?
Yeah. What kind of dumb shit can I say to get people fucking talking? Like, if you ask the average, like, Madonna fan, right? Like, hey, you like Madonna? Yeah. Do you know who Aretha Franklin is? But those people can't tell you.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, they should have had someone like Mary J. Blige, like,
yeah,
fucking talk about Aretha Franklin. Or, like, someone who actually can sing.
Yes.
Like, not someone who looks like a fucking cast-off from fucking Phantom Menace, right? Like, what the hell was she wearing, right?
She was... It's insane what she was wearing.
She's an idiot, dude.
Yeah.
Like, also, like... wanted to blow up the White House. Remember when she said that? Sometimes I feel like I want to blow up the White House. Or she was doing that. Remember she gave that speech like after
the
fucking...
She's always been outspoken, but that's her thing. It's like...
But who listens to her, though? Like, who...
Tons of people, because they don't know that her music is not good and that the only thing that people can talk about her is like, oh, she's crazy. She's going to wear cone-shaped tit bras. Dude. And she's going to... Like,
you know, what,
naked on stage.
You know what Madonna is?
What is
she's that? Like the fucking Post Malone for middle-aged people.
Ah, you're so right.
Right? Because it's like just pre-packaged. Here, we're going to execute some shock value here and there and get the media machine going, right? And then we'll just put out some half-ass fucking song and just sit out there and gyrate with some dancers running around, right? In scantily clad clothes and then... All of a sudden, she's like, oh, I don't objectify women. It's like, you've made a whole career of objectifying women. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
She's an idiot, man. Like, has anyone even ever heard her just sing without, like, all the fucking shit going on behind her? The circus?
The like, tomfoolery?
Yeah, is she capable of doing it? Like, has she ever sang the national anthem? Probably won't now, but I think she's horrible, dude. Like, I don't get... But then again... You got to think, though, too, we didn't watch that. Like, when the fuck did you ever... When's the last time you even watched MTV?
Oh, God.
Like, a decade?
No, more than that, probably.
Okay, well, same, right?
Yeah.
So, who do you think watches that show? Like, you think the audience...
Well, MTV's not music now.
But what I'm saying, though, is, like, you think the age bracket of the 7-year-old girls to the early 20... kids that are watching it give a fuck about Aretha Franklin?
Not at all.
Do you even think they knew who Madonna was? They're like, get this old lady off here and give us some mumble rapper or something.
Yeah, so I'm trying to figure out, growing up Madonna, like when Madonna was in her prime and young girls looking up to her, what they thought like. It's probably the same thing they now when they see Kardashians. They're like, oh, it's some chick that has all the money, all the fancy outfits that I want when I'm younger.
Man, I don't think women looked up to Madonna. I think it was like homosexual males that somehow found something to champion behind her. You know what I mean?
That might be right.
Like, I don't know any women that would say, yeah, we want Madonna to be the spokesperson for us. Like, no one says that. It would be like a dude saying, yeah, Jeffrey Dahmer, he can speak for all of us. It's like, no, wait a minute. We don't, that's not who we want. She's crazy, dude. Like, it's like fucking Rose McGowan, right? Like, what the hell happened to you?
Yeah, well, I think there's always something wrong with Madonna.
Here's what we should do. Look up who the award winners were for the awards last night.
All right, I got that pulled up already.
So we put it into light, right? people are upset that Madonna gave a stupid speech that was supposed to be about Aretha Franklin and she talked about herself. That's not really news. I'm surprised they even did an announcement or tried to do a honorary thing for Aretha Franklin.
No, I agree, because I'm going to read this list, and I don't know really anybody.
Any of them. Yeah, dude, because they're all dog shit.
So this is the Video Music Awards. This is not just like the Music Awards. This is Video Music Awards, so just the music videos. Camila Cabello for Havana.
Yep, sure, whatever.
Jennifer Lopez, De Niro with DJ Khalid and Cardi B. Oh, another Cardi B, another Camila. Post Malone, Ariana Grande, Nicki Minaj, more Jennifer Lopez. Imagine Dragons got it for Best Rock Video.
Oh.
Best Rock or Best Video with a Message, Childish Gambino, This Is America, which I disagree with. Best Direction, Childish Gambino.
Have you seen those spoofs that the people have done from other parts of the country? Iraq is hilarious.
Let's see what else. Yeah, that was it.
That sums it up. So yeah. All the people that tried to gain anything from tuning in whenever Madonna was supposed to give her illustrious speech about how great Aretha Franklin was, the people she was trying to connect to, even let's just say in a perfect world, right? If Madonna was going to go out there and actually praise Aretha Franklin the way she should, the people that are watching it aren't going to comprehend it. Because they're brain-dead idiots listening to that shit.
True.
I mean, like I said, I'm more shocked that MTV tried to do a, you know, pay some respect to her, to be honest with you.
No pun.
That's P-I-C-T.
Yeah, P-I-C-T.
Fucking respect. That Reverend Al Sharpton, man. Spelling bee champ of the fucking... of the millennium right there, dude.
Respect.
Dude, that suit's going to choke him out one day.
Yeah, seriously, because
right?
He lost weight. Maybe it just got to his head.
He lost all that weight, and then Steve Harvey gave him a bunch of suits. So like, he's all fucking like, you know, it's like the turtle out of the shell, right?
Yes,
like,
yes. The big shoulder pads.
But anyway, yeah, fucking Madonna. I mean, she's someone I would like to have a conversation with, like, on TV, like a debate. I would go, hey, I'll sit down across the table from Madonna and just, she can ask me anything she wants. I would love to ask her some questions and just have it aired.
What are you hoping?
I don't have to hope anything. I know exactly what I could do. I'd either try to get her to, I'd provoke her to the point where she would hit me and I'd just sue her for all of her shit, or I'd just make her look like the idiot she is. I'd just let her talk.
There you go.
Because that's what she wants to do. Like, she just wants to talk about herself. Just fucking hit record and then document this.
Yeah.
This person's
a
fucking winner,
dude. Well, that's
what
celebrities do. They talk about themselves. Speaking of...
Or how horrible everyone else is.
Our last bit of news from the VMAs, which is the weirdest performance ever. The show closed out with Post Malone.
Oh, God.
The most horrible person in the world. Who has tattoos all over his face and came out in a white suit that... look like a clown decorated, pink, blue, and yellow smiley faces, came out and did his dumb songs, which are not even considered music. And then, all of a sudden, the stage rises, and Aerosmith comes out and performs Dream On and Toys in the Attic with Post Malone on guitar.
That wasn't actually Aerosmith. It was a bunch of drag queens from Madonna's dance choreography team.
Yes, you know, it absolutely was. These are so I do believe Aerosmith, at least Perry and Tyler, have fully transitioned into like the 70-year-old hipster Beverly Hills ladies.
Oh, yeah.
Because they don't resemble any human form anymore. If you Google Joe Perry's mustache,
yeah,
you will see that it's not a complete mustache.
It's like mites got on his lip.
Well, yeah, it looks like on the upper lip, there's no hair, but coming down the sides towards his chin is dark shit.
You know what? It looks like he had a Fu Manchu and then his face caught on fire. Right? And then, like, just little pieces of it remained.
And we're not exaggerating this. You should look.
I don't think we're doing it enough justice, to be honest with you. We're fucking taking it easy on him.
I don't know what went wrong. What went wrong with Aerosmith at some point, but oh, man.
They got sober. I can tell you exactly what happened to Aerosmith. They got sober.
They did get sober.
And they started to suck, dude.
Yep. You're like, totally right.
Because think about it. When they came out, Aerosmith was
hardcore into drugs.
They could be America's best rock and roll band. But they fucking, after Pump, those albums are horrible, dude. Like, and then especially the ones they did in like the 2000s and the 90s. Like, Get a Grip was okay, the one with the cow udders on it. But after that, watch out, dude. I mean, it's...
Well, I think one of the worst reviews...
Armageddon, dude.
Well, that was their only number one hit was You Don't Want to Miss a Thing, Armageddon. Yeah. Their only number one hit.
And they did the crossover
making
thing,
making them a
one-hit
wonder.
Well, no. They were number one with fucking Walk This Way, dude.
No, they weren't.
That Run DMC collaboration, that had to have gone to number one.
I'm telling you, they're only number one on
Look
the
it up. You
charts.
Got the you got the fancy machine there. But the only saving grace of this fucking Aerosmith Post Malone thing is like Post Malone's holding a guitar, so maybe it'll get some kids excited about guitar again. But dude, Aerosmith needs to hang it up, man. Like, because that's bad. And then there's like this fake Joe Perry like doing a Pete Townsend guitar into the Marshall cabinet and smoke's coming out of it. It's so like fabricated.
All right, to answer Jacob's question, I don't want to miss a thing. U.S. Billboard Hot 100, the first number one for the band after 28 years together.
What was the first one?
The first, number one for the band after 28 years together?
Oh, that was their, oh.
Was after
28 years together.
Yeah,
oh.
That was their, yeah.
Really? So Walk This Way with Run DMC didn't go to number one?
What? No. It's weird.
Not weird. It makes total sense.
Well, I remember. Well, like, there's so many. Like, I like Dream On. I like
People
Dude
like,
Looks Like a Lady.
People like bad music.
I like
though.
Ragdoll. I like those songs. I like Pink.
No, you don't.
I do like Pink.
You like Pink?
Not the band, but the song.
The song.
Aerosmith. Yeah, I like
that song. Oh, God. Are you kidding me right now?
But I think one of his worst songs was Just Push Play when he tried to do, like, the Jamaican or whatever.
Well, he's rapping, too.
Yes.
That's like a. Yeah, God. I mean, Rocks is such a good album. Draw the Line is great. Toys in the Attic is amazing,
like
which they played Toys in the Attic.
But there's sounds from like, what's their, that song, Sweet Emotion, is so different from anything else they play. I don't know why they didn't go that direction.
Commercial success, dude.
Well, it's like
they started writing songs for housewives, like stay-at-home moms and
because
shit.
Because that's who they wanted to become, because they look like rich, drunk housewives.
Dude, well... I mean, that's kind of a smart... It's like people that do children's music, right? If you do kids' music, you instantly just sold at least two tickets.
Yeah.
Because there's a kid and a parent,
yeah.
Right? So if you get some, you know, drunk all the time housewife whose favorite band is Aerosmith, who gets an allowance, right? Like their husband's just, here's $3,000 a month. Leave me alone. Go on tour, right? Those are the people buying the $1,500 floor seats. Because they got to fucking see Aerosmith, right? Who wants to get up close and look at Joe Perry?
Yeah, exactly.
Look at him on your computer screen.
It's like 80 years old.
Well, it's not that. It's just what's going on with him.
No, with Steven Tyler, too. They're both wearing...
But Steven Tyler's always kind of been like the, you know, whatever. That guy's weird. You know, like he married like a fucking 15-year-old girl. Like, people don't talk about this. But he got this teenage girl's permission from her mom to, like, become her guardian.
Was this Liv's mom?
No. This was, like, in the late 70s or early 80s. You have to look up all the details of it. But he got, like, guardianship of this girl, then married her. She got pregnant or something. Then he told her to get an abortion or something. Then he just left her. Like, after she got an abortion or something. But she was, like, I think 15. You know, something fucking weird, you know, like, kind of that's kind of fucking creepy, dude.
But dude's old as shit now, and I can only imagine that they were trying to...
Leathery-skinned fucking...
Redo the whole Run DMC Walk This Way, but they didn't... Post Malone and Aerosmith didn't do a song together. They just... Post Malone...
They did. They played together because they end up doing like three Aerosmith songs.
Yes.
And Post Malone is singing on like Toys in the Attic and he's playing guitar and stuff.
But Aerosmith did Walk This Way first and then they got.
Yeah, then Run DMC.
But then they made it better. But Post Malone, and they didn't do that. They didn't release this as a single.
I bet they do. I bet they re-record it. I bet that's the whole point of this, because it's like think about it, dude. It's the fucking money machine, because now the only reason they got Aerosmith on there is because they thought they could market them to this younger audience of dumbasses. I bet if you go look on iTunes and see who the most downloaded thing right now is, I bet it's Post Malone and Aerosmith. So now they're going to fucking go, okay, well, now we need to re-record Walk This Way with, like, a trap beat and, like, mumble rap over it, right? With some auto-tuned fucking, you know, warbly.
I'm out.
It's going to happen, dude. Watch. Yeah. Like, they're going to remake E.T. You already know that.
Not going to remake. Nope.
Gonna,
Spielberg will not have it.
He's
going to
die,
alive.
Dude. He's Yeah, he's going to die. Then they're going to fucking remake E.T. Yeah. I hope I go first.
Yeah.
You know, like, think about you live in a world where they've decided to remake E.T.
Ugh.
Like, who wakes up and thinks that? Like, that idiot from The Flaming Lips?
Oh.
Wayne, right? I'm going to fucking re-record Dark Side of the Moon.
No thanks.
Like, why? Why are you going to fuck that up?
Just re-release it.
Leave it alone.
Yeah, re-release it as it is.
Like, who did he wake up and go, hey, there's some imperfections on this album. I'm going to fix them. He ruined it.
Yep.
So he redid, like, Sgt. Pepper.
No. It's bullshit.
People can't be creative, man. They got to fucking have gimmicks and, you know.
I agree.
Face tattoos.
It's weird.
You love Post.
I love Post.
You even refer to him as Post. Posty is what you call him.
Post it.
Posty.
Post it.
PM me. PM.
PM. All right. Moving on. Singer-songwriter Lucinda Williams.
Oh, now we're talking.
Announces Car Wheels on a Gravel Road anniversary tour. She will perform the album in its entirety on this new tour.
All
right. 20th anniversary.
Is there a Dallas date?
I'm looking right now. Find the dates, including shows in New York, Toronto, and Chicago. But let's look to see if Dallas. But if you haven't heard of Lucinda Williams,
you're an idiot.
You should look. And yes,
I saw her at
September 25th at the Pavilion at Toyota Music Factory, Irving, Texas.
We should go to that, dude.
Robert Plant and the Sensational Shapeshifters with special guest Lucinda Williams.
Oh, wow. That'll be a phenomenal show.
So there you go.
Man, yeah, Lucinda Williams, she's the... Wow, I mean... She's kind of like the female version of, like, a Towns Van Zandt.
There you go. That will be a pretty cool show. But yeah, Lucinda Williams, if you haven't heard this album, go look it up, please.
All of, man, she doesn't have a bad album.
Lucinda Williams. All right, moving on... A little bit of Marilyn Manson. Marilyn Manson collapses on stage and ends the show. He's told the crowd he was suffering heat poisoning.
Yeah.
Is what? That a real thing?
Madonna probably thinks it is. Heat poisoning. You know what? Marilyn Manson, that's kind of like what Joe Perry's face looks like. Like that mustache.
Oh, yeah.
Right? That because Marilyn Manson's got that Botoxed fucking...
Yeah.
Like... Oh, God. What a fucking idiot.
So Marilyn Manson collapsed on stage and cut short his set in Houston,
yeah,
Texas,
last
night. Before taking the stage, he had banned photographers, citing illness, and later told the crowd he was suffering heat poisoning. During his cover of Eurythmics' Sweet Dreams, Manson stumbled backwards and collapsed. There is footage of this. He is doing fine now. He went to the doctor, but... he's giving it his best.
That guy cancels so many shows, man. He shouldn't be allowed to fucking tour and be successful, man.
There you go.
Look up how many shows he's canceled this year. I bet he's
canceled. Marilyn Manson?
Yeah, he cancels shows all the time.
Well, he's touring with Rob Zombie.
Yeah,
right
he's
now,
touring
so.
With Zombie. Because they were here like on Saturday, I think.
Yep.
Friday or Saturday.
Okay, in an interesting bit, a very, very weird, interesting headline. The headline is Jack White of the White Stripes says Tom Waits
stole his watch.
White was visited by Waits at a San Francisco airport. Jack White performed at the Civic Auditorium in San Francisco, and during that show, he was visited by Tom Waits. White's Instagram detailed the encounter, saying that Waits visited the White's band with White's band and made all the musicians in the band confirm and pay testament to their love of the religion of music. The post continues. He also stole Jack's watch. Find a photo of the two men below. Pitchfork has reached out to White and Waits representatives for more information. Which, I mean, I think Jack White's kind of an idiot, but I always think Tom Waits is the coolest person ever on the planet. Like, the dude just is a badass, doesn't give a shit. I just can't imagine, like, he stole his watch, but if he does, he has a reason for it.
He probably did it. If he did steal it, it's probably an accident. Hey, can I see that watch and then forgot to give it back? It's not like the time that, like, Vladimir Putin took the owner of the New England Patriots Super Bowl ring.
Yes.
He just took that, right?
Yeah.
And that was the end of it, you know?
Yeah, what are you going to do?
Yeah, you got three other ones, dude. Be glad you can leave. You know? So I don't think it's a scenario like that. Like, I don't think I mean, good for Tom Waits, dude. I like Jack White all right.
I mean, I like Jack White. I just, he's a...
He loves himself.
Getting too much.
He loves himself. Yes. He's like the male Madonna.
Yes, he is.
Ooh, look, I'm Jack White. I make baseball
sticks.
So
does that mean you don't like him?
He's also from Detroit.
But he's a good musician.
He's a great drummer.
Yes.
Like, he should play... I would love to make an album with him of him playing drums.
Which is funny because the only drummer in their White Stripes band was not him.
Yeah, but she had two things he didn't have.
What are they?
Fronts. What? What do you say? What do you say to that?
Exactly.
Eyes. She had big brown eyes.
But I think that's a funny story in that it was reported. So hopefully Tom Waits and Jack White.
Fake news, man. That could be fake news.
Yes. All right. Interestingly enough, my cousin Josh was at this concert this past weekend. Pearl Jam played again at Wrigley Field in Chicago. But interestingly, Dennis Rodman, the basketball player, joined Pearl Jam on stage.
Oh, you know what? I know this.
Rodman praised Chicago and handed Eddie Vedder a ukulele.
So, do you know I'd actually know this Dennis Rodman Pearl Jam tie-in. I know this story.
Well, is it like a Chicago Bulls thing?
No. So Rodman was at one point in his life suicidal.
Okay.
And he says he was going to kill himself, and then he listened to the Pearl Jam song Black. And that's the song that goes do 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 do. You know, it has that descending guitar part at the end of it. And he said that song like turned the light on in his head, and then he decided he wanted to live. So Dennis Rodman is a huge Pearl Jam fan. I actually know this story. Look it up.
That's insane.
It's true, man. That's kind of an incredible, like, that's kind of the power of music right there when you think about it, right? Dennis Rodman, to me, is like one of the greatest basketball players ever. Like, I think Karl Malone would beat LeBron James one-on-one, right, in a basketball game.
Yeah.
But that's beside the point. But, man, that's a powerful song, dude. Like, that Pearl Jam song. Pearl Jam's one of the best live bands you could see, man. Have you ever seen them live?
I've never seen them live, but I heard they're excellent.
I saw them twice when George W. was president, when they played in Dallas, and both times, like, Eddie would go off on, like, a Republican, anti-Republican fucking George Bush rant, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, half the crowd would boo, you know, and they weren't into it. You know, some people just don't want to hear the politics anyway, but Pearl Jam's always been a very openly political band. They're not apolitical. You know, they chose a side a long time ago.
Yeah.
So you kind of get that, like, with their music, you know?
It's weird.
Yeah. But the Rodman thing is, again, Dennis Rodman had a shit ton of money. You know, he probably didn't make the best decisions, but Pearl Jam saved his life, dude. I mean, that's a wild story.
That is a wild, story.
He got up on stage with them, and that would have been awesome if he smashed the ukulele.
Well, so I guess what happened was Dennis Rodman declared his love for Chicago and said, "You people here are the only people on this planet Earth that gave me support." Holding a ukulele and said, "I know one thing. On the day I die, I'll make sure I'll be buried in Chicago." Rodman then walked off stage and passed the instrument, the ukulele, to Pearl Jam frontman Eddie Vedder, who said, "Dennis, just put that day off as long as possible. Do me a favor, all right?" Vedder then launched into an acoustic rendition of "Sleeping by Myself." There you go.
Whoop, whoop.
Whoop, whoop, whoop.
I like that poster they made, that Pearl Jam made for that show, of the fucking White House, like, in flames, and there's like a vulture eating Trump's face on the front of it.
Oh, yeah.
They got in a bunch of shit for that.
Why?
Can't make art, dude.
No.
You can only make bird noises like Yoko and then call it art.
Yeah.
Don't make anything that makes people think. That's too much.
Just, birds prefer Yoko.
That's why they got Post Malone, dude. You think people's brain is functioning when they're listening to Post Malone?
No.
That it's designed to turn your brain off.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Yeah.
They don't want us to think. Fuck it. Last bit of news before we get into our one-hit wonders.
Yeah, fuck you, Amazon.
Fuck it. J.J. Abrams, the filmmaker who gave us all sorts of stuff like Alias, Star Wars The Force Awakens.
It's like the same movie 10 times.
Yes. He gave us Mission Impossible 3, gave us Super 8. He's given us a bunch of stuff. You know J.J. Abrams. He has launched an indie music label called Loud Robot, which his film studio is called Bad Robot. Loud Robot. He's getting in the record business, which is kind of cool. It is going to be a partnership with Capitol Music, so there's that. And the label will run independently, but will give Bad Robot the opportunity to place original music in its film and television shows. So, yeah. I guess we can look forward to soundtracks, and I don't know if he's going to, like, indie label was what it says.
Yeah, he should start signing bands.
Yeah, that'd be badass. I'm in.
Yeah, I mean, like, you're good. You're
That's
on.
Huge.
Yeah, you guys play instruments? Cool. Oh, you have a laptop and you sing through that? Nope. We're not interested.
You're out.
That's what they need, dude. They need someone with a bunch of money to be punk rock, you know? Like, there's no punk rock anymore. They don't go against the grain.
It's unfortunate.
They just, here's how you play the game, and you have to play by these rules. Like, fucking Stanley Kubrick, you think he subscribed to that shit?
No, if I ever make it in the film business, he's who I want to model after. I don't want to get into the Hollywood shit. I want to just, you know, have the family stay at my compound.
Yeah, he was an artist.
Edit right there and just make my own movies the way I fucking want to make them.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. J.J. Abrams has that to start a label. You know,
yeah.
He has that kind of power now, especially with Capitol Records.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's like the label.
Yeah. And that would be awesome if he was actually like, we're going to get these bands out there and do it, even though he's making like the biggest movies
like,
ever.
They should start having concerts on the top of the Capitol building, you know, building.
Which I don't understand. Yeah, I know that. And I have no idea why they haven't yet.
Because most people would freak out and not be able to get it together on a, like, actually, people can go up there and film a music video, but like, there's a lot of elements that go on, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, you got to think you're on a roof. That's probably where the air conditioners are in a fucking building like that.
Yeah, but would they would have something up there, and that could be like a little series, like,
yeah,
you know, a YouTube series that, like, concerts on top of the hill.
Well, they had, like, you know, that band Mudhoney. They played on, like, the Space Needle.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
So, I mean, it's definitely, they can do it, but J.J. Abrams, make it happen, dude. Put some nuts back into rock and roll.
There you go.
Or do something. Don't release. He's probably gonna. He makes movies about robots, dude. What are we fucking fooling ourselves for? He's just gonna release shit that sounds like Daft Punk.
Has he made a movie about a robot?
Yeah, didn't fucking Transformers him?
No, that's Michael Bay.
Same fucking thing. Whatever. Yeah. All those guys are the same, dude.
Michael Bay's his own.
Whatever.
The worst.
I thought it was the same person. Kind of like the one-hit wonder thing. I thought that was the guy who made the Transformers movie. I'm telling you, dude, I don't know a lot about movies.
No, Michael Bay, Transformers. Michael Bay also did, like,
that's what I said.
The Rock.
He makes the same movie.
Yeah, but J.J. Abrams doesn't, though.
I just think they're all the same. All those elitist Hollywood. I almost said it, dude.
I wish you would have said it.
I mouthed it.
you did mouth it.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on to our one hit wonder, which are one hit wonders, two bands, but are the same.
No.
Back in 1993, there were two songs which were only differentiated by really like one letter, but they were the same song and they were by two different bands. They came out the same time. I'm talking about the bands 95 South and the band Tag Team. 95 South had Woot, There It Is, Woot, There It Is with a T, and Tag Team had Whoop with an MP, exclamation point, There It Is.
Coincidence?
I think not.
Oh, man. How does this happen? Those are, I don't know which song is what, though. Like,
so,
I know Whoop, There It Is.
So 95 South, the cover of that album is kind of like, spray painted on with
let me see, turn that thing
with like African-American bikini models.
No, you know what that looks like? It looks like the cover for that Now This Is What I Call Music Volume 80 thing. Like, it looks like bad 90s computer graphic.
No, it's like MS Paint, basically.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
So 95 South, it was the lead single released from 95 South debut album Quad City Knock. It was produced and written by CC Lemonhead. And Jayski. It's hilarious. But this song preceded the similarly named Whoop There It Is by a month. So Whoop There It Is. It basically,
that's confusing. This is like,
so this song was the one that had that like snippet of like an old white guy, simulated old white guy, that's like, excuse me, Sonny, do you know where I can find some booty?
Yeah.
And then they went into the song. So it was all on the Hot 100s R&B rap rhythmic top dance what Billboard 100 hits. Yes.
Both of them.
There It Is. And then a month later, Whoop, There It Is, tag team, which kind of had like a purple, blue, orange, yellow thing with just the two members of them. And Whoop, There It Is. Tag team tried to prolong the success of Whoop, There It Is with Addams Family and Disney versions, but none of them cracked top 40.
Dude, that song where, like, you know, if you're at like a football game, right, and it's like 3rd and 18, they cue the whoop, there it is, right? Yeah. It's like the hype song. Like, people go, yeah, we're going to get it.
Yeah.
Get out of your chair and stand up. That song really gets going. Like, that's exclusively only played at skating rinks. Right? And like
stadiums.
Third and long situations.
Yeah. So the Whoop, There It Is by Tag Team, the song sampled the beginning synthesizer line from the 1980 Italo Disco hit I'm Ready by Kano. The chorus is almost the same as the song Whoop, There It Is.
Yeah, it's exactly the same.
Yeah, it is, but it's like Whoop, There It Is.
Yeah, it's the Vanilla Ice, Queen conundrum, yes. Right? No, mine goes do-do-do.
But the verses are very different.
Yeah, you got to be original.
Members of 95 South claim that Tag Team copied their work. both singles were recorded in Atlanta. And Tag Team member DC claimed that the phrase Whoop, There It Is was coined by strippers from Florida working in Atlanta.
Well, then I hope they got paid.
Yeah, DC was a DJ in an adult entertainment establishment in Georgia during that time. There you go.
Well, I believe him. Because anyone that would make up hanging out in a strip club, why would you do that?
Oh, my God.
They welcome you there. That's a safe place to be in, like, a nuclear fallout or something.
So, something I did not know about Whoop, There It Is music video. In 2010, the song became the subject of media scrutiny when former website taken down by Hulk Hogan Gawker posted an item asking whether United States President Barack Obama appears as an extra in the song's video.
What?
A similarity was noted between Obama, who was 31 and working as an attorney in Chicago at the time the video was shot, and an Atlanta hired extra who appears at the 1 minute and 1 second mark in the clip. However, no one involved in the making of the video was able to remember the extra's name. The Gawker writer came to the conclusion that it was not, in fact, Barack Obama.
That's hilarious.
Isn't that ridiculous?
Yeah, that's, I mean, who kind of cares, but that'd be hilarious if it was him.
The song was used extensively during the Philadelphia Phillies run to the 1993 World Series.
There you go, dude. You know what that means. That song wins championships.
Yes, it does. The song was also used in films such as Shark Tale, Beverly Hills, Chihuahua, Rio, and Elf.
Beverly Hills, Chihuahua?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
That's a movie.
Yeah.
Derek Dorsett of the Vancouver Canucks used the song as his goal song for the 2015-2016 NHL season.
I nailed it.
Cubs use the song when the player hits a home run.
They must be from Chicago.
Or they said Atlanta.
No. Oh, well, why are all these Chicago teams using it?
Yeah, this is so weird.
And isn't Obama from Chicago?
Yeah.
Or what? Is that right? I don't know. Did I just blurt something out?
I think you might have.
Yeah. They said he was born in Kenya, but who knows? Hawaii. I think Hawaii was throwing him around. It's tough. Maybe he is the stork.
In 1995, Tag Team made an alternate version of the song called Whoomp, There It Went.
Oh, man.
Whoop, There It Went, together with several Disney characters. It is basically the same song, but with several of its profane lyrics altered for children to depict Donald Duck's party in this version rather than a generic one in the original.
Dude, that's street right there, man. Holy shit. We're going to take a song. This song, didn't you just say this song originated in a strip club?
Yes.
And now Disney's got a hold of it.
Oh, yes.
My, what a wonderful world. Right? That was the sequence just then, right?
It really was.
The song, the court battle. Hey, I got this from a stripper. Disney. Wow. I mean, what a conundrum.
And an enigma.
That's kind of unbelievable.
Oh, my goodness.
That's the best one-hit wonder right there.
That is super funny.
That's a one-hit wonder squared. Right? That's what it is.
Whoop, there it went.
Well, so if you think about it, the natural progression of that song now would be... Whoop, there it go.
Oh, man.
Right?
I'm dying. I'm trying to work here, but it's difficult.
Can we? We should listen to it. You said it came out in 95? I wonder if Hanson...
Because the original song came out in 93, so only 2 years later.
Yeah, they had to get ready. Well, I bet Hanson is like on it.
Oh, my God.
Or like, Jodeci. Right? Whoop, there it went.
Whoop, there it went.
Featuring Mace.
Shit. Oh, my God.
I'm telling you, we're never going to top that one-hit wonder.
No, we're not. That was too good.
Yeah, I mean.
What other one-hit wonder is used like this, though?
Oh, it's been, they've ruined it. Look what they've done to it. They've spread it so thin.
Hey. I'm just, when you go to Whoop, There It Is, and that's, you know what that song's about and where it originated from, and you see, like, it's been covered for Disney and the Addams Family movies.
So no, but no athletes are using Whoop, There It Went, I see.
No, okay. No, unfortunately.
Just the original, huh?
The single is certified 4 times platinum in the U.S.
Oh, my God, really? 4 million? And
and what's even better, despite never reaching number one on the pop chart, it reached number two. It was the second top song of 1993 behind Whitney Houston's I Will Always Love You.
Oh, how do you top that, dude?
Right. I Will Always Love You. Whoop, There It Is. Yeah. Oh, shit.
Well, what's funny is about, 7 years later, Aerosmith covered that Whitney Houston song, right?
Which one?
They didn't cover it, but they did the same sappy crap song, right? And I don't want to measure her. Right? Like, yes. Same target audience, right? Hey, you Aerosmith guys, do this song with pianos and stuff.
Oh, boy. Tag Team in 95 South, we miss you. Why aren't you touring right now?
Oh, they're playing the bowling alley down the street.
Oh, my God.
There it go. I'm telling you, they need to do that one.
It's unbelievably funny.
That's who MTV is like. That's probably the level of stuff they need to stick to when they want to do memorials for people.
You think so?
Yeah, they should leave people like Aretha Franklin alone.
Oh, yeah.
What the fuck does MTV have to do with Aretha Franklin? Like,
that would
be like Chuck Berry getting an award from Justin Bieber. Like, why? They don't relate at all. You know what I'm saying?
No, I know what you're saying.
Fucking MTV. They should be, Devo, maybe. They could talk about Devo.
I like Devo. They're still around, right?
Yeah, but Devo was like the troll of MTV. Like, if you think about it, Devo was just like this character band.
Yes.
That just purposely did weird shit, right? They were like the Revenge of the Nerds band at the end of the fucking movie. There's eight different things going on, right? And it's just all goofy, campy, like,
yeah. And they made, like, they even like covered like ooh ee ooh ah ah,
yeah. Ching, ching. But, and then their videos were always like you know, like there was like a stutter in the VHS tape, like,
you know,
so they were, that's MTV. Like MTV didn't do anything to help kickstart or help Aretha Franklin's career. Like, are you fucking kidding me?
I laughed way too hard at this segment.
Yeah, whoomp, there it went.
From strippers to Disney.
Strippers to Disney, dude.
And that was their only thing.
That's some Illuminati shit, right? Because if you think about it, too, Disney has all those hidden penises in it and stuff.
Yes.
Whoomp, there it went. That's their, like, subtle way of saying it.
It's really weird.
Like the priest in the fucking Little Mermaid who gets the boner. There's no denying that one.
Oh, God.
You know what I'm talking about?
I do.
How do you explain that?
On the cover of The Little Mermaid...
Yeah, there's a penis in the tower.
Yes, the gold, and it was like a disgruntled artist who left it in there. But in Lion King, when old Simba falls on the flowers...
Sex.
But it doesn't spell sex, though. I asked about this because I interviewed the director, Todd Minkoff, for the movie a few years ago, and I asked absolutely about that. And he's like, oh, yes, no, it doesn't say sex. It was like a joke between our SFX team, like the special effects team. So it's SFX and not sex.
See, that's not fun.
No, I mean, it's not. No, I absolutely asked about that.
That guy's a loser. Why didn't he just give the answer that everybody wanted to hear?
Sex.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Fucking, what a dipshit. They could have made that movie better by putting one of those songs in it.
Disney, yeah, whoop there.
Disney already owned it, right? Cue the music. Sex. Whoop. There it is. Put some strobe lights on it or something.
Oh, God.
How about those lasers at that ELO show? Remember that?
Lasers.
Shot him fucking right through my glasses, man.
Oh, yeah. So there was a few parts during the ELO show where I kind of like had to look away because of the strobes and lasers everywhere.
Yeah, I thought the spaceship was going to come down and get us.
Yes.
I was ready.
He was ready.
I'm still ready.
All right. Now on to meow.
Meow. Meow.
Well, this show has gone off the rails, folks. Meow. For our main event, I'm good, sir. Boston, not the city, but the band, who's been around since like 1973, maybe? And have had like maybe 30 different members at...
Not true.
20 different members?
No, they ain't had that many. Maybe like 15 or so.
Okay.
Not, well, 30's a stretch.
You know the band Boston. They've been around forever since like 1973.
That's forever.
That is forever. Tom Scholz.
Schultz, yeah. MIT graduate.
Correct.
He made that whole album almost, I think, pretty much by himself. That's like the fucking... That's your debut album, right? So the first thing anyone heard from this band was that fucking first record, dude, that self-titled Boston album.
Yeah.
And it looks like, you know, it's got that ELO themed, you know, the fucking burning guitar and...
Well, burning guitar, but the guitars are actually shaped like UFOs, yeah, with Earth like shattering at the bottom.
Yeah, like a dome.
Yes, yes. But like track one, side one, More Than a Feeling.
Dude, just name off all those songs. Every song on there is a fucking hit.
More Than a Feeling, you know that song. More Than a Feeling.
Everybody knows that
Peace
song.
Peace of Mind.
That's the best song on there.
Foreplay, Long Time.
That's that organ-y.
Yes.
You know, that
Rock and Roll Band. Smokin'. Hitch a Ride, Something About You, Let Me Take You Home Tonight.
Yeah, I mean, dude, that song, that whole album is phenomenal, man. Arguably one of the greatest rock and roll debut albums of all time.
That song went 17-time platinum in the U.S. alone.
The album or the...
The album.
Yeah.
So this is what you come out with, first off, right off the bat. Yeah,
and then the second record is equally as good. Not as many, like...
It's called Don't Look Backstage 2 years later.
Yeah, 2 years later.
Features the same UFO guitar thing looking at shit. And, yeah, it has Don't Look Back, The Journey, It's Easy, A Man I'll Never Be, Feeling Satisfied, Party, Used to Bad News, and Don't Be Afraid. It's still... People love this.
Yeah, how many did that one sell?
That one sold, let's see here.
I bet it sold 5 million.
In the United States, has so far in the United States, it has done 7 times platinum.
Damn, so 7 million. Dude, that's a great one too. Third stage, the one after that is not. That's when it just
third stage, and then Walk On, which they took 8 years to make their fourth album, and then 8 years to make their fifth album, Corporate America, in 2002. Dude. And then they took 11 years to make Life, Love, and Hope in 2013, which was their last big one.
Yeah. So, no, their last big one was the second album. Well, that's all you need from Boston. Like, anything after the second album is just kind of, I don't know. Not, the singer killed himself. Right, like, so he, this is like one of the saddest stories, though, right?
Brad Delp, right?
Yeah, Brad Delp.
He committed suicide.
Yeah, he fucking took a Weber grill into his house, into his bathroom, and then he wrote a suicide note. And in the suicide note, he basically says that Tom Scholz is the reason that he killed himself. Because Tom Scholz was kind of making it out that, like, he was the mastermind of the band, which he kind of was.
Founder, like, lead guitarist.
He came up with the Boston sound, right? But Brad Delp is the voice of Boston, which is just as strong a half of what makes that band great as the music does.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's a 50-50 split to me, no matter how you look at it.
And it's weird that he committed suicide, like, recently, like within the last 10 years. And police found him dead in his master bathroom, like Jacob said.
Yeah, he lit the grill. Like,
yeah,
he
in the bathroom.
Filled with charcoal, shut the door.
Yep, 2 charcoal grills were found in the bathroom fixtures, and the door sealed with duct tape and a towel underneath.
Yeah, it's like just this painful, probably death to do that. But yeah, it left a really horrible, you know, like sad suicide note. But dude, Boston was a phenomenal band, man. Like, a lot of people, I think, kind of rail on them, or, you know, kind of don't get it, but it's just like party time rock and roll music, like great guitar playing, great vocal melodies, like just makes you feel good, you know. It's kind of like hearing Van Halen for the first time, you know. It has that fucking real fun, like,
it's fun, like almost kind of like big hair rock.
Well, no, not that, it's just about having a good time, like,
right?
I mean, if you had big hair or no hair, that's kind of irrelevant. Like, that's what, with that music, those are people that are like, with like Nickelback, right? I'm not a fan, but some people go to a Nickelback concert because they have a great time because they fucking love that band. You know what I mean?
But you got to think, like, with Brad Delp doing this to himself, how bad was it? How bad did he hate fucking Scholz?
That's what I'm saying. When you read about him, the hatred that they had, that he had towards Tom Scholz, because Tom Scholz basically, from what I've gathered of reading about this band, is in charge of everything. The finance side of it, the business side of it, the writing side of it, the visual side of it, all of it. So he's the head dude. So then he decides who gets paid what, right? So I think Brad Delp was like, man, I'm, you know, you're kind of paying me as if I'm an employee or something. And I'm the voice of the band, you know, without think of it this way. Without Brad Delp, there's no Boston.
Correct.
Because you only have half. You have half of the puzzle.
Right.
You know, you have the 3 other guys in Boston, what would be the live band of them. The drummer was this dude named Sib, and I forget who the other guitar player was and bass player.
Gary Phil.
Yeah, Gary Phil. That's right.
Tommy DiCarlo, Tracy Ferry. But those are, I think,
those are later people.
Yes.
But,
Sib Hashane.
Yeah, he was the drummer.
Yes.
But, yeah, man, fucking Brad Delp was he's the thing that sets them apart. Like, he's like Steve Perry to Journey.
Well, and to Journey's credit, they did find pretty much somebody who sounded exactly like
him. Yeah. Like 20 years later, though.
Yes, correct.
Right?
Yes.
Boston has always kind of never even tried to do that again to that extent, like on newer music, because dude, I would put Brad Delp in the vocal category of, you know, like a Freddie Mercury. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? He had a very, I think that's like the thing I think that kind of gets lost in, like, with music and like starting a band, is that you can have all the great music, you know what I mean? But if you really don't have someone singing over it, and saying something that's kind of like thought-provoking, you know, makes you think and wonder and not just kind of tune out to music. Like it kind of engages you, you know what
right.
I mean? Like Mick Jagger, you know, or like a Freddie Mercury who kind of tells like a fucking story with what they're saying. And you can visually see it as you're listening to it. And, dude, fucking Boston, when you listen to those lyrics, it's nothing like, you know, futuristic or like utopian.
No.
You know, it's very just cut and dry, like yeah. rock and roll band. It's talking about a band trying to make it. Nothing special, but the fucking delivery of it, of with Brad Delp's voice, man, is what made them unique and gave them that sound. Because that's a very unique sound that band had. And Tom Scholz, like, created this, you know, he invented the Rockman, which is like a portable guitar amplifier.
Yeah.
But he created, like, he built their PA system, like, from scratch.
Right.
And they traveled with their own PA. So they by default, they were already going to sound different because he had created these, you know, things that were specific only to that band. He's a fucking MIT graduate. Like, he's making calculators and shit.
Yeah, no, there's only a few rock stars that have, like, are in that caliber, and he was one of them, MIT dude.
Yeah, you know who is one? Is the fucking dude from The Offspring.
Yes.
He's an MIT graduate.
Yeah, but they went on to perform on really successful bands.
Well, you know, that's like when you form a band, you just have to, like, think of your strengths. Like, you don't think of things that you would like to do but they're unattainable.
Right.
You go, okay, cool, there's five of us and this is what we're good at, let's try that. Like, The Offspring didn't set out to try to be ELO.
Correct.
They fucking went, this is what we can do, this is what we'll do.
Yeah.
Like, they're kind of a one-hit wonder. Like, Boston isn't a one-hit wonder at all. They have, like, fucking eight hits.
Well, there's, like,
Their whole first album.
You know, they're, technically, I guess, five singles off their first album, which yeah. are
all of the top, all probably in the top ten, I bet.
And yes, and in the second album, like, four or five.
Yeah, I think
more
they had
hits.
Four off that one, too. Yeah.
So, yeah, they're multiple.
I love that band. Man, I absolutely love Boston. Like, every time I listen to those first two albums, man, it gives me that sense of fucking joy. You know what I mean? That you get, like, when you hear something for the first time that you really like you're just instantly, you know, gravitating yeah. towards it. The way those guitars are stacked, and, you know, it's kind of got a big ELO kind of sound to it, because there's this big fucking, like,
open. It's like full. It's like not just a guitar and a key and a bass. It's like bigger sound.
It's a guitar me.
It's the guitar.
It is, guitar, dude. Man. And I remember in that first record, too, maybe even in the second one, or I think maybe it's only in the second one, you open the gatefold of the record, and then it's printed in there, no synthesizers were used in the making of this album. So, like, all the sounds that you were hearing were guitars, but you were hearing things that were, like, they sounded like a spaceship going off, or like a rocket going by.
Yeah.
And it was all done with guitars.
Yeah.
Again, Tom had, like, created these guitar preamps and, you know, effects pedals and amplifiers. He had modded their stuff, you know, so that would, they just sounded different.
Well, I want to read something interesting about Boston. 'Cause since last week we talked about Black Sabbath, the band actually opened for Black Sabbath, and the band was pretty apprehensive about doing so, but they said the experience was pleasant. Delp said the great thing about Black Sabbath was that they didn't do sound checks. So we were afforded all the time we wanted on stage. Ozzy Osbourne actually said, "Ah, you want to go up and play some songs? Go ahead." They couldn't have been nicer.
Well,
which is, like, super cool to hear Boston and then Boston opens for Black Sabbath. They just, you think of these two, it's like, that's kind of cool and really weird, like, different crowds, I feel like.
Yeah, well, my dad, he told me, like, one of the weirder concerts he ever went to was Edgar Winter.
Okay.
Opening for Black Sabbath.
Really?
Yeah. Because it was, you know, at the time, in the Black Sabbath is European band.
Uh-huh.
You know? They're not from. They're
yeah,
not
they're during, yeah.
So then, when they come to America, they wouldn't bring another band from, you know, the UK with
right.
them. They would just get, you know, maybe someone in the region that they were in or another band that had a song out, right?
Yeah.
That was kind of doing good. So there was a lot of weird bills like that, you know, in the 70s. You would see bands opening for other bands you wouldn't think would work. But if they're good,
which
they're
they
fucking
kind of,
good.
Which they kind of alluded to in the movie Almost Famous. Stillwater opened up for Black Sabbath at the,
oh, yeah.
the first show.
Yeah.
And you're just like, these don't sound the same.
No. Well, you know, and I'll tell you who had a big hand in that was the Rolling Stones. They were kind of the first band that kind of did a bill where it was like, well, that's weird. You have Stevie Wonder before the Rolling Stones, but in between them, you have B.B. King.
But it's interesting because Rolling Stones are really a blues band.
They were.
They're a blues band.
Yeah. But they also were, they knew that, like, when they got to the States, you know, they wanted to play with people that they respected.
Right.
Who they liked, you know, so. And then you had, you know, like Bill Graham and stuff would put on festivals and, you know, have really diverse lineups. But, you know, Boston is kind of the same as like ELO, right? What other bands sound like Boston?
There's, no.
So they're instantly, no matter who they play with.
Like you could say Journey and Styx pretty much sound the same.
Yeah, and Boston is kind of similar to Journey and Styx as well.
But on a different level, though. I think you can distinguish, like, REO Speedwagon.
Like, Boston and Queen would have been a good show to see.
Oh, that'd be
like
badass.
I wonder if that lineup ever happened.
I don't know.
Because that would have been a lot of ego going on there, dude.
That would have been a huge ego.
Brian May would have probably beat the shit out of Tom Schultz, fucking nerd. Right? Because Brian May is, like, 6'5".
Yeah, he's gigantic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, and imagine him drunk. That big hair, right?
Do you think Freddie Mercury would fuck somebody up if he was wanted to enough?
I'm not even going to make a bad joke there.
But yeah, Boston's a good damn band.
Love them, dude.
They are...
Smoke it!
But it's interesting because Boston, you think about Boston, and they only had 6 albums through 1976 through 2013.
Well, and when you say it that way, what you should say is they only had 3 albums.
Well, technically...
Because they only did 3 with Brad Delp.
Okay, so yeah, so 3... But they had 6 albums.
Right, but whatever. I mean, that's like, would you count the Metallica Lou Reed album?
No.
Well, it exists.
Yes.
Okay, well, so the same thing.
Okay.
Those last 3 Boston albums are just, you don't need them.
So yeah, the 3 Boston albums, and it's weird because they're so good, and where like ELO has more than that.
Well, ELO functioned for a lot longer. Like, the thing with the first Boston album, too, is it came out in, what, 1972, 1973? 76. Okay. So it comes out. He started working on that album in 72.
Right.
So it actually took three or four years to make that first Boston record. And in the 70s, bands were still doing an album a year.
Yeah.
So when they put that album out, they had to get another one out quick, and then 2 years went by before they did the second one.
Yep.
So it, you know, that machine, it was only good for 2, really. And there's some good moments on Third Stage, but it's not like those. From front to back, those first 2 Boston records are phenomenal. They're flawless, like Mortal Kombat, flawless victory.
Finish him.
Yeah, double fatality, right?
Like, yeah.
Incredible.
No, it's. It's a damn good album.
Gonna hit you right.
And you know what? You know what's great about stuff like Boston and ELO? You don't see the excellent artwork on albums today like you do with them.
They had a theme. Like, they almost had their own font, and you didn't even have to see ELO. You could just see the
font. And
the spaceship and the red, yellow, and blue.
Yep.
Like that color scheme. That was those were people that didn't need to call themselves artists. They just were.
Yeah.
Like, they encompassed and embodied like the actual literal definition and meaning of that. Everything they did was very thought out and methodical, and, you know, it was a presentation. Like, it was turning in your fucking homework.
They did their presentation on their album, physical album, but never like dressed like anything like Madonna, like we talked about earlier. It was all about the good music.
Yeah. I mean, 70s, you know, garb flip over the cover, the back cover of the live Bob Seger album, and there's like a dude wearing a teal blouse and like some satin, like women's pajama bottoms.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm sure Boston wore some big shirts or, you know, whatever, but yeah, it wasn't a, there was no, they didn't need the value for shock value. Like, if you're going to champion someone, you know, like a Madonna, right? Like, Gigi Allen is the same thing.
In what way?
What's really there? Like, it's just all shock value and on the surface. Like, there's no depth to it.
Yeah, I wouldn't consider Gigi Allen a true artist in any way.
Well,
I mean, he was, he's a one-of-a-kind motherfucker,
no different,
for sure.
No different than Madonna, though.
Correct.
So it's,
I
you wouldn't compare Madonna to Boston. You wouldn't compare Gigi Allen to ELO, because those things have substance.
Yes, and I believe that Madonna and Gigi Allen are, when you look at them behind their facade and their mask of shock value, there really is.
Well, one is contrived by a machine, and then the other one is just contrived.
And Gigi Allen's more interesting than Madonna could ever be.
Yeah. Fucking. Yeah, so Boston rules.
Boston rules, man.
The band.
The band, not the city.
Well, I don't have anything bad to say about Boston.
Do you?
Nah, that's what I'm saying. I don't.
Okay.
I think that wall is unnecessary at the ballpark they have.
What wall?
Fenway.
Oh. No wall?
No, well, it's just, who did that? Like, why? Right? Like, how did that happen?
No.
Some goofball reason. Like Wrigley Field, right? Let a bunch of ivy grow out there and put a net over it.
There you go.
You like baseball?
I love this. Besides pro wrestling, it's the only sport I really love to watch is baseball and going to a game.
Did you see that triple play the other night?
I did not.
Rangers turned it.
Wait.
It was like the first triple play since like the 20s.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
You got to watch it. It's pretty good.
I'll have to do that.
Dude, I don't know you like baseball.
I love baseball.
Let's go to a game.
Let's go to a game.
They're playing tonight.
Can we share some hot dogs together?
I'm not eating hot dog.
With bacon on
it? I had my fucking veggie enchiladas, dude. I can't be eating a hot dog on top of that, and I'm not eating any of this chocolate.
I'm going to push all of this brownies and graham crackers towards you.
I only eat the fun brownies. These aren't fun brownies.
We'll put some of these other little gummies in.
Nah. I got laundry to do.
He's got laundry to do, folks. So that is our episode 6. It is Boston. We love Boston. Go find their albums. I'm fairly certain that you can find them. However, they're probably their first two albums might be a little difficult to find because nobody's selling that shit because they are damn good.
Oh, they're selling them, dude.
So episode 6, Multimedia Men Network. This is the Unbalanced Note, episode 6.
Woo, woo.
Find us on iTunes and Stitcher Radio, Google Play, BoomstickComics.com. Brian Kluger and the co-host with the most, Jacob Douglas. You can find him on Instagram at Scrumtrulescence.
Scrumtrulescence.
And you can find him maybe on a stage somewhere.
Performing at Tiger Cabaret.
There you go. He's trying to come up with the next Whoop There It Went song.
Nope, there it went.
Whoop There It Went. Until next time, till next week, do not watch the MTV Video Music Awards.
Watch it and then educate yourself on what not to be.
There it is.